is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The incompetence the EC has shown, you know, it will be useful for us to do a forensic audit of the EC's own systems and the numbers.
That's Ghana's former president, John Dramani Mahama, calling for an investigation of the Electoral Commission in last week's election. Details coming up. Also, Sudan is off the list of state sponsor of terrorism. And South African government warns its citizens to be aware of misinformation about COVID-19 vaccines. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The U.S. has formally removed Sudan from the state sponsor of terrorism blacklist. The decision comes less than 2 months after Khartoum pledged to normalize ties with Israel. For Sudan, the move opens the way for aid, debt relief and investment for a country going through a political transition and struggling under a severe economic crisis. Washington placed Sudan on the list 27 years ago after accusing Sudan of harboring Islamist militants linked to international terrorist attacks. As part of the deal, Sudan agreed to pay $335 million to compensate survivors and victims of families from the 1998 Al-Qaeda attacks on U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, and for the victims of an attack in 2000 on the American warship the U.S. has called off the coast of Yemen. The attacks were carried out after former Sudanese leader Omar al-Bashir gave al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden sanctuary in Sudan. In Ghana, the presidential candidate for the main opposition National Democratic Congress, NDC, is calling for an independent forensic investigation into last week's elections. Former President John Dramani Mahama says the inquiry will determine the opposition party's next steps. One of the ways to resolve an election dispute is to seek legal redress. It is, however, unclear if the opposition party, NDC, will legally challenge the outcome of the vote. Mahama's remarks come after the Electoral Commission declared incumbent President Akufo-Addo winner of the election with 51.59% of the votes cast. Mahama came in second with 47.36% of the votes. Critics say the former president should concede defeat as part of an effort to ease what they say are political tensions in the West African country. In an interview with VOA's Peter Cloete, former President Mahama says the Electoral Commission must learn from the errors it committed to ensure they are never repeated in future polls.
Well, in the run-up to the election, there were a lot of flaws in the process, and we kept drawing attention to them. And it's like the Electoral Commission was adamant to our call, but on election day, we saw exactly what happened. This is the most incompetent election we've had. I mean, everything about this election does not reach the standard that Ghana's Electoral Commission, you know, has attained for itself. Ghana's Electoral Commission is held in high esteem as one of the best electoral commissions. Unfortunately, this election, she can't even get the results right. The declaration is all over the place.
Mr. President, I saw your press conference where you rejected the result. So with this rejection, what are you going to do to make your case to the people of Ghana? Since you said they voted for you, how are you going to convince them that you won the election?
Well, we know we did, and we are currently doing a forensic audit of all the constituencies, first to establish what happened there, and then secondly to reconfirm the figures that we have. Because this case might end up in court, I don't know. I cannot mention anything for now. But we're doing an audit, and based on that, we'll take whatever decision we need to take. But I think that the incompetence the EC has shown, you know, it will be useful for us to do a forensic audit of the EC's own systems and the numbers to come to what the final number for the EC is. Because as of now, I don't know what number they're going to gazette.
But Mr. President, what is your reaction to the African Union poll observer mission that came out saying that the elections were transparent and credible and that most people were not prevented from voting? The ECOWAS poll observer mission led by Madame Johnson Sirleaf said the same thing, that it was peaceful and transparent. So what do you say to these prominent African organizations that monitored the poll, pretty much giving a stamp of approval to the elections?
Normally, when you have an observer mission like that, you need to wait and see their final report, because often they give the report up to the point of counting. And it's true, I mean, the whole day was peaceful. People went about, you know, voting without any problems. And the queues were orderly. And so they'll say all that. And there were a few instances of people caught with pre-printed ballot sheets. I mean, the video evidence is there. Normally, their final report will capture the collation process. And so this report does not capture the collation process. And a lot went wrong with the collation process.
Mr. President, 4 years ago, when you lost the election, you handed over peacefully. I was here in Accra when you held a news conference that you had called then opposition leader Nanado Dankwa Akufo-Addo to concede. People are saying you have proven that you are a true Democrat. They said, why are you not doing the same thing now?
In the interest of the more than 6 million people who voted for me, I must uphold our democracy and hold the Electoral Commission to higher standards and hold this government to a higher standard in terms of our democracy. I mean, the way they've conducted this election, the government, President Akufo-Addo, and the Electoral Commission, is a dent to our democratic credentials as a government. And so in my principles as a Democrat, I can't be seen to be sweeping it under the carpet and just letting it go. I think that we must bring closure to this by seeing exactly, you know, where the issues are. And I mean, if an independent audit is done by the EC, we bring somebody in to crunch the numbers, do an independent audit. If I lost, why not? I mean, I'll be the first to concede and, you know, walk away. But as long as that is not done, and I know that there was a deliberate attempt to subvert the will of the people in favor of the incumbent, it will be wrong for me in terms of our democratic processes to just leave it, because we will not learn the lessons of this election. I think that we must learn the lessons of this election so that we don't repeat it in a future one.
Some Nigerian political analysts have been reacting to the outcome of Ghana's general election. Dr. William Owodi is an African affairs expert at the University of Port Harcourt in Nigeria. Owodi spoke to reporter Mike Mboni about the election in Ghana. He says the outcome is an indication that Ghana has fairly stable democracy that should be emulated by other African countries.
I've come to look up to Ghana as one African country that alongside Botswana, that these are the two countries that conduct free and fair elections, and everybody, they accept the authenticity of their elections. And so this is something that has to be looked at. And then when you look at that, over 30 million people, voters were registered to vote, 79% of the registered voters voted, and then it appears that about roughly 13 million persons voted, and each of them, both the incumbent president and his challenger, the former president, scored roughly 6 million and some fraction votes. That means that it was keenly contested, and if the result had come out earlier than it did, it would have restored confidence in the system, in the Ghanaian electoral system. So the way it is right now, the Ghanaians were already congratulating the former president, Mahama, he was already given a victory lap before this was cautioned by the Electoral Commission's announcement of a winner. So that is something that we have to learn to do without in Africa.
Former President of Ghana, John Mahama of the NDC, also contested the election and lost. Do you think past leaders or presidents in Africa should contest after leaving office?
Now, if you ask me about why should a president that had contested election, ruled, lost election, left office, and is now returning again to contest against the incumbent, the question we have to ask here is, what did Mahama forget in the Ghana government presidential lodge? What did he forget there that he wants to pick 4 years after? So does it mean that they didn't have other people in the National Democratic Congress to challenge Akufo-Addo? So that is the problem. It may possibly be that some members of his own party may have become disgruntled and didn't support him, and that's why he lost. The other factor may be that when he ruled before, his scorecard wasn't very good, and so they edged him out. These are the things that we shouldn't do in Africa.
Do you also think there are lessons to be learned from the Ghana election by sister African countries?
Then when you go to the lessons for other African countries is that elections are not do or die exercises in Africa. So, but even at that, Africans must charge their own course by insisting that the Electoral Commission must be allowed to do its job in an unfettered environment. Political parties in Africa must allow all the elements of democracy to play out in an election. Those who win should congratulate and should be humble, while those who are not victorious should congratulate the winners and hope for a better outing next time. So the point now is that African countries must learn to engage in peaceful transfer of political power to the winners, and that is the crux of the matter, and that is the lesson we must all learn from what has happened in Ghana.
That was William Woody, an African affairs expert at the University of Port Harcourt, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye. The South African government has warned its citizens to be aware of misinformation about COVID-19 vaccines after the country's chief justice made controversial remarks at a recent prayer meeting. John Mogwang, a devout Christian, called on God to destroy any satanic vaccine. Darren Taylor reports.
COVID-19 infections are spiking in South Africa. The virus has claimed the lives of more than 23,000 people in the country and devastated the economy. The cry for a vaccine to end the crisis is loud. It's in this context that the country's chief justice prayed against certain vaccines at a gathering near Johannesburg.
If there be any vaccine that is of the devil, meant to infuse 666 in the lives of people, meant to corrupt their DNA, any such vaccine, Lord God Almighty, may it be destroyed by fire.
Mogwang later told journalists he had no reason to retract his comments.
I will never look backwards to check who is happy with what I'm saying, who is unhappy. I am independent-minded. I'm not worried about fictional reputation. Oh, this is how a chief justice is supposed to behave. This is how a judge is supposed to behave. Where is the manual for that? Where do you get it from?
He says, as a Christian with freedom of speech, he doesn't have to offer any evidence of his beliefs.
It is prayer in the name of Jesus that is controversial. All other prayers are fine. So I'm not going to be begging for permission to pray. Never. In public and in private. I'm going to pray all the more.
The judge's critics say there's nothing wrong with praying, but there's a lot wrong with suggesting in that prayer that some vaccines may be evil, and in so doing, possibly causing people not to take it. That has the potential of causing more infections and deaths. Mogwang emphasizes he's not against all vaccines, only those meant to advance what he calls a satanic agenda.
Any clean vaccine, they must produce it quickly. People need that for their own health. My prayer is meant actually to cry unto God and say, Lord, indeed, if there is any vaccine that would negatively affect the lives of people, that vaccine must never see the light of day.
Medical scientist Barry Shoup says vaccines have a history of stopping infectious diseases, and he expects coronavirus inoculations to be just as effective.
These are new vaccines. The trials have been quite rapid. The development of the vaccine has been extraordinarily rapid. So there is some room for people to kind of feel a bit unsure. And it's our duty to try to assure people that they've gone through extremely rigorous safety evaluation before these vaccines are licensed at various steps, from the trial steps all the way to licensure. So these are extraordinarily safe vaccines. And
Schub, an emeritus professor in virology at Witwatersrand and founding president of the African Virology Association, says nothing good can come of authoritative public figures like Mogoeng planting doubt in people's minds about COVID-19 vaccines.
And unfortunately, when remarks such as what the Chief Justice said, that certain vaccines will have various contaminants put into them, which can maybe change the DNA, which is, there's no, absolutely no scientific evidence of that at all. What he's claiming in terms that these vaccines may be harmful, there really is absolutely no scientific evidence to support it.
Mogoeng acknowledges he's not a scientist, and anyone who wishes to disagree with his views is free to.
It's a clear indication that our people are not idiots. They are not just going to embrace what I say. Others will take it as a prayer point. Others will reject it for whatever reason. That's how it's supposed to be.
But the health community says because of the judge's prayer, the battle against COVID-19 in South Africa just got a whole lot harder. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. The Prime Minister of the Kingdom of Eswatini, formerly known as Swaziland, has died in a hospital in neighboring South Africa after contracting COVID-19. Ambrose Diamani, 52, a former businessman, was named Prime Minister in October 2018. He said in mid-November he had been diagnosed with the coronavirus and was transferred to a hospital in South Africa about 2 weeks ago. The head of government's role in Africa's last absolute monarchy, Eswatini, is limited. The current king in power since 1986 names all ministers and controls parliament. The kingdom has reported more than 6,700 coronavirus cases and 127 deaths among its population of 1.2 million people. Clouds are heavy with rain in most parts of Zimbabwe. Preparations for yet another farming season are underway. Zimbabwe has in the past few years experienced food insecurity. Now the rains bring renewed hope for a change. Reporter Kunza Zenwashi has more from Harare.
Larima Vima, the Minister of Midlands Provincial Affairs, recently gave an outlook of the rains this farming season.
The Meteorological Services Department has predicted a normal to above normal rainfall season. We are therefore anticipating a bumper harvest in most of the areas of the country.
But farmers are worried about more than the rains. Justin Mutasa is a tobacco farmer and bemoans the high price of farming supplies, such as seed and fertilizer.
Fertilizer, which is a key element in both tobacco and maize, a lot of people will not be able to buy those bags of fertilizer. That's a fact. The prices of the inputs there are quite high. They are very, very high. You reduce the acreage and buy those which you can afford, and it is going to affect the production in long term. So that in the long run is going to affect the yield per hectare.
Dr. Shadrack Makombe is the president of the Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union. He says farmers are in a fix this season.
Most of these commercial farmers who are standalone, who are expected to do it by themselves, surely they are between hard ground and a rock. They don't have the means. And as a result, if there's no government intervention or some interventions coming from somewhere, as much as we are going to have the rain, we are not going to produce as expected.
Dr. Anxious Masuka, the Minister of Agriculture, explained the government's efforts to protect the farmers from expensive inputs.
As government, we are planning on two programs for cereals. The first is the modified presidential input scheme, commonly known as COMPOSA, where we're targeting 1.8 million rural households.
He adds that their target has since been revised to about 2.2 million and that 2.1 million households have been trained to take up types of farming where very little machinery is needed. The other government program has targeted 290,000 hectares of maize to be planted. So far, 285,000 has been contracted. These programs have made inputs available to farmers. Mavima says farmers ought to spread risk by also growing small grains that do not need much rain or fertilizers. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunamashe from Harare.
Foreign tourists resumed flying into Botswana in November after months of closed borders due to COVID-19. Lonely Planet in October ranked Botswana's Okavango Delta fourth on its list of places in the world to visit. But the coronavirus lockdown has left many tourist companies struggling to stay in business. Mokandisi Dube reports from Chobe, Botswana.
Botswana is one of Africa's prime safari destinations, attracting about 2 million international visitors a year to see the Okavango Delta, a unique wetland, and Botswana's abundant wildlife. Travel restrictions triggered by the pandemic brought tourism to a halt for much of 2020. But like many other tourism industry players, safari lodge operator Ben Muhalakwe sees hope after Botswana's recent decision to allow chartered flights into prime tourist destinations.
We still have hope. We're looking forward to the beginning of next year. Hopefully our peak season, which usually starts in March, should bring in some positivity with it. And hoping that everything normalizes, everything gets back to normal.
Some tourism and hospitality workers like Grace Rukuru are now jobless.
For the moment, I don't have a hope because I think there's still going to be a big challenge for the freelancers to be called to go and help because they still have those staff. They have been staying home for a long time.
Her husband, Chibia Longwani, owns a homemade canoe and used to provide rides to international tourists.
We work with other lodges, which give us business. If yes, they're going to get some guests coming, we hope we're going to deserve to have a big smile.
Minister of Environment, Natural Resources, Conservation and Tourism, Permanent Secretary Oduwezi Koboto says the sector is showing signs of recovery.
We have also seen some recovery in the international market, especially after the government started opening up for direct flights, charter flights.
Tourism is Botswana's second largest foreign currency earner and contributes 13% to the Southern African country's gross domestic product. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Kasane, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.